Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
How far in the Eras Tour movie are you currently?
Well, I skimmed a little bit. My sister-in-law was over on the weekend and we were watching the film. She's a big fan of Taylor Swift, as am I these days. We skipped around a little bit, so I have not watched the whole movie yet. It is, obviously, it's a big time commitment. You know,
we're talking 3 hours.
Three plus hour film. And that is, of course, condenses down the actual length of a concert performance. So, you know, we went through all the songs from Folklore that she performed because that's kind of my current jam. That's the era that I'm in, is the Folklore era, very into that record right now. We listened to 1989. We listened to the songs from, I forget which the last album that has Karma on it and Vigilante Shit.
Midnights.
Listen to that, which closed out the show. So listen to some of those songs, which I hadn't heard all those before. Listen to some of the acoustic, the piano set. You know, You're On Your Own, Kid. Hadn't heard that one before. Really messed me up.
That's where the friendship braces came.
Sure, right.
If You're On Your Own, you know, Kid didn't exist, none of this would have happened because Travis wouldn't have done the friendship bracelet. So, like, you owe a lot of the current era of Chiefs football to that specific song.
Sure, just to that one song. And, you know, I mean, I wish that they had released as a film. I understand this is not feasible for a number of reasons. I mean, I wish they had just released the November 11th concert in Argentina as a film, right?
Yes.
But maybe someday.
Quick editor's note, I did not realize I had the wrong microphone plugged in this episode, so my voice sounds terrible. Sorry about that. We'll be better next time. Happy holidays.
Welcome in to It's Always Sunny in Chiefs Kingdom. I'm Austin. Find me on Twitter /X at Real Bird Lawyer, on Blue Sky at Bird Law Expert. Still haven't skied yet, but I'll get around to it at some point. Here with me is always my co-host Taylor at Taylor_Witt on Twitter /X. On Blue Sky at Taylor M. Witt. Have you skied yet? Have you
fired off the sky? I prefer the term blue myself.
Oh, you blew yourself. Yes. I think I actually maybe did sky once, but I have not been back to sky a second time.
Yeah, of course. It harkens me back to the Arrested Development Tobias Fugate line. So that's my, in my head, it's always blueing, or blue myself. But I did one time and I was like, hey, I'm here. This place is weird, much like Fred's. And then I was like, I'm going back to Twitter. That's where I'm.
That's where all the people are for now. I mean, you know, fewer every day and then replaced by more bots. And I actually had a very amusing interaction the other day where I had three separate accounts named Mindy or something like that, like three consecutive tweets in a row, but three separate accounts, all with the same first name, bunch of numbers. And they liked three different tweets. So it didn't show up as like, this account's like three of your tweets. It was Mindy liked this, Mindy liked this, Mindy liked this. And they were three different accounts. Ricky. And they were, you know, three different bots with the same first name, a bunch of numbers.
What's the end game there?
I do not understand. I do not understand what is happening. You know, the You know, the white supremacism, the racism, I could wrap my brain around that.
Yeah,
Like,
I get
I
the
don't
end
agree
game.
with it,
Yeah,
but I
right.
understand why people are espousing that messaging. It's something that they believe in. They're wrong, and they shouldn't be allowed to espouse hate speech on the internet. But, you know,
They maybe should be allowed. I don't know. I
well, maybe
mean,
they
free
should,
speech-ish and
but
stuff. But the point
regardless,
is, they're assholes. But what are the
either
bots?
way,
They
I
like those
understand their
tweets, and
motivations.
they're
The
trying to like get
bots,
you to what? Click on their profile, see a
and
little
they're not
picture.
even actually peddling pornography or anything like that. Like these three accounts,
Yeah.
Mindy or
Were
whoever it
they just egg
was,
accounts?
no, they had a profile picture and they had three different messages. You know, one was like, I'm looking for sexy romance. One was like,
Sure,
I'm looking
classic.
for a, you know, whatever musical partner to dance with or something like that. And, you know, one of them had like a beach, one of them had like a, I don't know. But the point
They're
is,
casting a wide
like
net.
they weren't tweeting. Like they these accounts didn't have any tweets. They weren't replying to stuff. You know, like I'm not really sure. Mia, it was Mia.
Mia,
The
sure,
three
classic.
different Mias. Yeah, one was creating a love story for the ages. One was a music lover seeking someone to sing along with,
Can't
and
blame
one
them.
was a beach bum singing a part seeking a partner to surf the waves with.
Wow,
And
so they're like very, they're like different shades
yeah,
of each
they're all
other.
variations on a theme,
Yeah,
and they like
yeah.
three different tweets consecutively. Now from the same thread, but like, what is their motivation? They don't have a, they don't have any tweets in their
I'll give
profile.
them
I just
this.
don't, I don't know.
You've been interacted by a lot of bots before. These are the first ones that stuck with you, that
That's
made you
true.
want to talk about them on the pod. That's what they
That's
did.
accurate. That's
That's
true.
how they got in there.
Yeah,
They
that's true.
threw you a curveball. You didn't expect a curveball.
Yeah,
You get the
that's right.
fastball
Now we're
99%,
talking about it,
Yeah.
and that's what the bots want.
That's what they
Mia
wanted.
is
That's
going to
what they
be
got.
listening to this podcast.
Shout out Mia. Kick off.
Let's give the listeners an update on our listener fantasy leagues. We made it through the first round of the playoffs in our redraft league. Our plucky rookie prevails in his first round matchup over Roscoe, advancing to face the number one seed Z-Man in the semis. So congratulations to him or her. On the other side, Volk narrowly defeated Doovy, 125.5 to 124.92.
Crazy.
This would not be the closest matchup we've ever had in our fantasy playoffs because again,
Nope.
we had a tie in the
In the
finals a
Super Bowl.
couple of years ago,
In the
but
Super Bowl.
in the Super Bowl, on the last play of Monday Night Football. But good showing by Doovy. I gotta say, I don't understand the choice to start Rashid Shaheed and DeMarcus Robinson, who combined for 21 points. Surprisingly, DeMarcus had a touchdown, so you know, good job by him over Jordan Addison, who scored 27. And I'm not
Jordan
really
Addison and
sure.
literally any other player. I
Yeah,
mean,
I'm not sure why Doobie felt the need to start Rashid Shaheed and DeMarcus Robinson over Jordan Addison. He's going to be kicking himself because he did narrowly lose that matchup. He would have won if he'd started Jordan Addison. But you know, I'm not going to question it too much because fantasy's crazy. And he
yes,
could have started Jordan Addison and he could have had 0 points, or he could have scored 21 because,
that's how it
listen, it's
goes.
all random. Volk will play Doughy Fresh for a spot in the Super Bowl on the other side of the bracket. Congratulations to everyone who advanced there and is still alive. In Dynasty, we said goodbye to Caveman Jesus. He had a snake bitten season. He finished fourth in scoring, but his team went 5-9. And because we know ball, he still made the playoffs. So we had a wild card team. He made it in as a wild card, and he promptly put up his lowest score of the year. He gets blown out by the three seed Dennis.
Now, I
Dennis
got to
is going to
defend him
face,
when I
oh,
blow
sure.
past him a little bit. He
Well,
had
of course.
horrible injury luck.
Oh, it was awful. I
Really,
mean,
really, really bad. In the playoffs, which is the worst time you can possibly have injury luck. And of course, he had
it's a tough
Will
situation for
Levis,
him.
who went down. And then before the week, he had Tyreek Hill, who was, of course, a late
Sure.
scratch, late-ish. And he had Olave again on Sunday. Like
Yeah.
he was declared out there. So, I mean, just a really tough break for our guy, Caveman Jesus, who fought all year. His team's named Pain because of all these matchups. The highest scoring team in the league was actually not the highest scoring team, Dennis. It was whoever played Caveman Jesus on a week in, a
Right.
week out basis. They
Yeah.
actually scored more throughout the year than Dennis did. So just a wild year.
Yeah. Tough scene. But you know what? He managed the playoffs, which means he didn't have to fight, did not get relegated. So
Which he
that's
would have, knowing
good
his
job by
odds.
him. Dennis will have advanced to face in like Flint, who was the two seed on the other side of the bracket. You were victorious over Mike 57, 136 to 110, which sets up a semifinal showdown against me. your co-commissioners, your podcast co-host, your best friend. You got a tall task because my team has finished third, first, and first in scoring the last 3 weeks. How are you feeling about this match?
Well, if my team hadn't finished first, third, and second in those 3 weeks, I might be a little, you know, intimidated by
sure.
1-3-3. But I've got a 1-2-3 in my bag. So everything's looking good. We're matched up. We're ready to rumble. It's going to be a fun, you know, this is what, when you and I do a podcast listener league, this is what we wanted to come down to.
Sure, of course.
You know, us in the playoffs, playing each other. Now, we couldn't quite make it in the Super Bowl. You did your part yes, being the right. one seed. I had to slip all the way down to the four to get, or the five to get in here because of my, I was 7-7 this year, despite scoring a lot of points. That's kind of, I kind of had a caveman Jesus like, performance, but, at the end of the day, we're here, we're in the final four. We got some really tasty matchups just so everyone, in case people are curious how things are going to shake out in week 16. I've got Josh Allen. He's got Dak Prescott. That's two excellent quarterbacks. I've got Derrick Henry and Tony Pollard. You're countering with Kyren Williams and James Cook. So everybody's scoring a lot of points there. Beasts all around. Wide receivers, Davante Adams and Rashee Rice for me going up against each other in the Vegas-Kansas City game.
Yep.
And you've got Debo and maybe Michael Pittman. He was banged up this week. We'll see if you make
it. Yeah, I got Justin Jefferson in the flex right now. You know, I've got Puka Nacua on the bench. You know,
I was wondering about Puka. Yeah, yeah.
I got too many options, frankly.
You do, poor guy. And so our final slots, I've got Mostert, Palmer, and Matt Stafford as my super flex. You currently have Jonathan Taylor, as you mentioned, Justin Jefferson, and your guy Gardner Minshew, who you brought all those Colts into your team early on in the draft, and we all had a hilarious time talking about all the Colts that you got. And you know, now you have Taylor and Minshew and maybe Pittman in your final four team. So
they've been pretty good. My dude Gardner Minshew was a clutch selection by me because when Anthony Richardson went down, you know, if I didn't have Gardner Minshew, I would have been starting a non-quarterback in my super flex pretty much all year, and that would not have gone well for me. And I'm excited to take you on. It does mean that one of us is guaranteed to make the inaugural Super Bowl in the Listener Dynasty League, which is a great feeling. It's a shame that we can't both make it, but obviously, if it's you, I'll be cheering for you, and if it's me... You probably won't be cheering for me, but that's
fine. I will for sure. Yeah, we're in this thing together, but it'll be me.
Yeah, of course, sure. on the other end of the spectrum, we had four teams fighting to save off relegation to our redraft league. Jordan Screen and Chief Justin O prevailed. Ka-ka! They unfortunately left Sorta Rican and Osho Jared to scrap out for another week, another chance at survival. They are going to be facing Rumham and Tojo. Tojo is, of course, sadly already been relegated, but if he knocks another team out, he can at least decide their fate. And he's been setting a lineup and fighting to the end. We just we'll have to see how it shakes out. Finally, in Cutthroat, we started with 16 teams. We are down to two. It's Dr. Weiss, a.k.a. Drew, versus me.
Yeah.
I'm one of the teams. I survived the cut. I'm here at the end. Chief Justin O is going to be kicking himself this week. He got eliminated after his six-player bench almost outscored his starting nine.
Yeah.
His six bench players almost outscored the nine players that he actually had in his starting lineup. Tough situation for him. He had the Jalen Hurts, you know, sickness situation, ended up having to start Dak Prescott, who had a down week, and just some tough situations across the board. I really felt for him because he started Bijan Robinson, who I started in my other cutthroat league, and he scored like 1 point this league. Not a good situation. I'm a little bit disappointed that he got eliminated because Dr. Weiss had some tasty players that I really wanted, namely Tyreek Hill. I really wanted to add Tyreek Hill as sort of the last little element of my Infinity Stone gauntlet here. I have an insane team. I should win, but, you know, it's a two-week final. May the best man win.
We should also point out that the final score in week 15 was Justin, 119.9. Drew 120.26. So
he did bench a player.
That's right. Yeah. Drew
Clement, he was safe. So
more, but he benched whoever Tyreek or no, not Tyreek. He had somebody on Monday night. He was like,
yeah,
party in there. But you're right.
He did do it to be safe. But my team scored 185. So listen, I was pretty confident that I was going to have one of the top two scores after about the first half of the games on Sunday. So it was very chill for me. I had a great time with it. And, hopefully we'll be celebrating a win for me here in a couple of weeks, and we can gloat over all the listeners on the pod. But I do want to shout out the listeners who participated in the Cutthroat League
Yes.
because that was incredibly, insanely fun. It did inspire us to work on a little zombie league idea that we're going to be maybe
Hope
experimenting
so.
with the podcast listeners. So that'll be great. If you guys missed the playoffs in your fantasy league, you can still get in on the fantasy action on Underdog. You can use our promo code Sunny, SUNNY. Matching deposit up to your first $100. If you didn't get a Christmas present for somebody, just, throw our promo code in there, double your Underdog money, give some of that money to them. They can gamble on sports for free. My dad loves to do it. He's bad at it, but
Who isn't?
he likes to support the exactly right. He's not a sharp, none of us are sharps, but it's fun, and it gets you some skin in the game on Sundays or on Saturdays or really whatever you want to do. So we got a great show for you guys today. Chiefs are back on their winning ways, which is great for us. It's much more fun to do the podcast when the Chiefs are coming off a win. We got a little dark there last week. We've got news, news, news. We've got what is happening. We've got a recap of the Chiefs' victory at Foxborough over the Patriots. And we have a preview of the Chiefs against the Raiders on Christmas Day. But first, starting with the injury news, we are recording this on a Wednesday, and ordinarily we would have an injury report to present to you on Wednesday. But because the Chiefs are playing on Monday, this is essentially a Tuesday. There's no injury report on a Tuesday. So we have limited information at this point. But what we can tell you is Sky Moore to the injured reserve with a knee injury. As of Wednesday morning, and I've checked back in on this today, the details on this are a little bit fuzzy. So Andy said after the game that he left with knee swelling. He obviously, being on injured reserve, has to miss at least 3 games, which would be
The
the
rest of
rest
the
of the
season.
regular season. Yep,
Or, I mean, but either
exactly.
way, even if there was, I think the deadline for the four. Oh, I see what you're saying. All right, keep going. Sorry.
Sure, he could come back for the playoffs, but will he and should he? Which is something that we can discuss when we get to the game recap. But in any case, it sounds like knee swelling. It's some kind of knee injury. It's not clear exactly how serious that is. We'll probably get some more information later this week. Isaiah Pacheco had shoulder surgery a couple of weeks ago when he first went out, and apparently it went great, and he's expected to be back this week. He is expected to be practicing when the Chiefs are back out there on the practice field. Whatever it was, it must not have been a huge deal because 2 weeks later, he's getting ready to play an NFL football game, and we know that when Isaiah Pacheco is on an NFL football field, he ain't half-assing it. So
You stole
that
my joke.
shoulder
I was going
is,
to say, good news for Pacheco is when he's out there, at least he's not making much contact with guys. I mean,
yeah, right,
good
exactly.
grief. I don't know how he's going to get back out there and lower that shoulder, but he'll find a way.
So with no injury report, we'll just have to see who ends up suiting up on Monday. It does sound like the team, with the exception, obviously, of Sky Moore, RIP to him, is getting healthier, which you do like to see this late in the season. In other news, transaction-wise, the Chiefs did sign wide receiver Anthony Miller, a former Bear, and tight end Isaiah Gathings, an undrafted free agent. He was with the Chiefs during training camp, listed as a wide receiver in camp, and didn't make the 53-man cut down. And you know that if a guy didn't make the cut in training camp in this wide receiver room at this point,
We saw, yeah.
that says a lot about his abilities as an NFL player. But
Well, and also apparently he ate his feelings because he didn't make it as a
sure,
wide
he
receiver
came
and is
back as
coming
a tight
back as a
end.
tight
Sure,
end. He's
right.
doing the Kelvin
But
Benjamin.
yeah, and I'm sure he didn't make that choice overnight. Like, it's not like he saw the Chiefs' performance in week one and was like, huh, I'm going to be a tight end. I'm sure that that's probably something where the Chiefs said, hey, we'd love to bring you back, but maybe put on a little bit of weight and,
Learn how to block.
hit the blocking sleds. And, I bet Isaiah and the Chiefs are probably both regretting that choice because, the need right now is not a tight end. The
They're
need
going to
is a
need him to
wide
slim
receiver.
back down. He's going to
Yeah, we're going to need you
cultivate and
to,
harvest and
yeah,
cultivate
he's
and harvest.
exactly. We're going to need him to stop cultivating and start harvesting so he can get back down on wide receiver weight. Really quick on Anthony Miller. I mean, no expectations, obviously, this late in the season for anybody that gets signed, unless there's somebody that's played in this offense before. There aren't any guys like that just kind of hanging out. But,
I mean, he played
he
with
was this,
Nags, though.
he did. And he played with Matt Nagy in Chicago. He was actually drafted by the Matt Nagy regime. In 2018, second round pick for the Bears, 51st overall. And as a rookie, 423 yards. As a sophomore, 656 yards over seven starts. Nine touchdowns combined over those two seasons, including seven touchdowns as a rookie. You know, he hasn't played in the NFL since 2021. There's, you know, been some injury issues in there, obviously. You know, he's another 5'11", 200-pound big slot receiver. So, like, I don't know. But, like, at this point, throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks yes. can't hardly hurt, right?
Yep, exactly right. This is a body, you know, most likely just some practice squad depth or whatever. But at the end of the day, the Chiefs have, you know, they lost Sky to the IR, and they're just trying to backfill the roster with some guys and see if somebody pops. You know, it would have been really nice looking back to get a guy like Amir Smith-Marset. I was watching the Panthers, and he had a nice little play in the Panthers game this weekend. But so it goes. Can't look back on 53-man roster cuts at this point because it's been a long season. But, yeah, we'll see if Anthony Miller can, you know, have any juice whether they call him up on game day or even if he's just kind of hanging around the team and learning some stuff. I like the signing. Might as well.
Sure, why not? Let's talk about
what is happening.
Okay, so we have to talk about what happened to the Chargers on last Thursday night. We recorded the podcast last Wednesday. On Thursday night, the Chargers played the Las Vegas Raiders, and they trotted out backup quarterback Easton Stick because Justin Herbert is out for the year, and the game was 48-0 at halftime. And the Chargers lost this game 63-21. And it took him until, you know, 9 o'clock or whatever Pacific time. So, you know, it was 10 or 11 o'clock here in Colorado and nigh on noon in Kansas City. And people were wondering, are they really not going to fire this guy? But they did. Canned him. They canned Brandon Staley. They canned GM Tom Telesco. They simply could not let this loss pass. I mean, it was in Brandon Staley's own words, like 3 weeks ago, they asked him, you know, how do you know your message is still resonating with the team? And he's like, well, we haven't gotten blown out. So, that happens around the league. Like, I know the message is getting through because if the message wasn't getting through, we'd be getting blown off the field, and that hasn't happened. And then they got blown off the field 63-21 by the Raiders, and boop, he is gone the next day. Very funny.
Very funny. As we were watching that game and cracking up about it, one number that I thought was funny is before the game, the win probability had the Chargers at 57%. It got to 99% for the Raiders by 8 minutes left in the second quarter.
Oh my God.
So through a quarter and a half when the game was 28-0 Raiders after fumbles and just ridiculous. I mean, the way that this game went was absurd. It was just the Chargers did absolutely everything they could to
get. Yeah, at one point, I think Easton Stick had consecutive plays of a pick six and a fumble six. So
he did.
I mean, yeah, that was
really, really rough.
That is tough to do.
You know, the Chargers, I saw a lot of people saying that they were charging in this game, which is not correct at all. Charging has a lot, it has as much to do with the expectations as it does falling flat.
Sure.
Like, you know, like you've got to set them up before you knock them down to charge. They never set anything up. This was just getting their ass kicked from start to finish. This was one of the worst performances. I mean, I don't know the numbers, but I'm sure this is one of the all-time, either the first, second, or third worst performance in franchise history. The fact that it was to a visiting division foe is rough. I mean, obviously, when you're visiting, the Chargers are really at home.
Yeah, so it's not more great, like a
home Raiders game. But just the overall embarrassment. And, you know, they named their interim guys, and interim head coach is Mr. Giff Smith, or maybe Smith, depending on your pronunciation guide there. And their GM is JoJo Wooden. So they have Giff Smith and JoJo Wooden in the house now to write this clown show of a ship. Cannot imagine being a fan of that team. Cannot imagine being stuck with them for, you know, sickness and health and all that. I mean, it just
Giff Smith and JoJo Wooden sound like literal clowns. Those sound like names that you would make up at clown college. Yeah. Speaking of clowns, John Spanos of the ruling Spanos family that controls the Chargers says, I think sometimes it's maybe the misses that help you grow the most. that you can learn from the most. That was at Brandon Staley's, the press conference they held after canning Brandon Staley and Tom Telesco.
Just called him a miss right in the media.
I mean, you know, when you let the guy go and then you immediately refer to him as a mistake, and you know, it's really something. Now, the Chargers have hired three straight coaches with no head coaching experience at the NFL or college level. So it will be interesting to see if they buck that trend. If they go with somebody that has previous head coaching experience. No, Dan Quinn's name sounds like, you know, they've got that written all over it.
We were
manifesting Sean McDermott.
We were. They did mention today that they have interest in Jim Harbaugh of the Wolverines, which obviously,
sure, of course,
he has coaching experience all over the place. But yeah, McDermott he was born to be a Chargers head coach.
He was.
He was birthed in that DNA of just absolute mediocrity and disappointment and blowing close games and I mean, everything they've ever done. He is
13 seconds, the myriad of ways that they have lost games this year.
9/11.
The Bills, I mean, like Sean McDermott, I really hope that the Bills keep him around. But if they don't, and he's a free agent, there's no place that he can coach. There's no team that he can coach that he's better suited to coach than the Los Angeles Chargers. Let's talk about the AFC picture. This was a really interesting week, and we don't have to spend a ton of time discussing it because 8 of the 9 top seeded teams in the AFC won this week. So nice. Baltimore, Miami, Kansas City, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Indianapolis, Houston, and Buffalo all won. The only team in the top 9 seeds in the AFC to lose was Jacksonville, who was playing Baltimore. So playoff odds for these those teams right now, the Ravens have clinched 100% chance to make the playoffs. They have a 74% chance to get the bye. We'll talk about the scenario here in a second, but big odds for them. Miami in second place in the AFC, 99% to make the playoffs, 61% chance though to win their own division, and a 13% chance at the bye. And then Kansas City, one game back of Miami, two games back of the Ravens, but with the tiebreakers over both, 99% chance to make the playoffs, 99% chance to win the division, and 12% chance to get that first round bye. We'll talk about the scenario there in a second. Browns are currently the fourth seed in the AFC with an 88% chance to make the playoffs. The Joe Flacco Browns.
They can't be the four.
They cannot be the fourth. That's true. You're correct. I just put them here in order of record, sure. But they are not the fourth seeded team. Because
first
they have a 4% chance to win the AFC North. They're not going to win the AFC North because they play in the same division as the Baltimore Ravens. They're pretty much locked into that 5 spot, assuming they're able to continue to win out. They have a game up on everybody else in the wild card standings with that 9-5 record. The Bengals are currently in the playoffs.
Yeah.
But they only have a 37% chance to stay in the playoffs, which is fascinating to me. They have a 3-6 record in the AFC. These numbers are from the New York Times playoff simulator, by the way.
Sure. They have and I guess they end Steelers, Chiefs, Browns. So
correct. Sure. But it's also partly because of their tiebreaker situation. So they're losing basically every tiebreaker. They have a 3-6 record in the AFC. They have an 0-4 record in the AFC North. So they can't win a tiebreaker over the Browns in their own division because that would be head-to-head if they split, then division record if they are tied. They close against Pittsburgh, Kansas City, and Cleveland, like you said. So 37% chance to stay in the playoffs for the Bengals. And then you've got the AFC South. Jags, Colts, Texans are all 8-6.
Crazy.
The Jags have the head-to-head tiebreakers over both of those teams, so they control their destiny. They play the Bucks, the Panthers, and the Titans to close out the year. Indianapolis is currently in the playoffs, but they have a 51% chance to stay in it. The tiebreaker over Houston because they won the first head-to-head, but they play in Week 18 in a game that could decide who wins the division, potentially, if Jacksonville stumbles. Yep. But the Texans are currently out and have a higher chance to make the playoffs than Indianapolis. They have a 57% chance, which is wild. I don't know the exact methodology that goes into the NYT projections, but we have a team that's in, the Bengals, with 37% chance to make, a team that's out with a higher chance than a team that's in, the Texans over the Colts, and then the Bills. The Bills are currently the ninth seed They have a 68% chance to make the playoffs, according to New York Times projections. Now,
wild.
They do play the Chargers, Patriots, and Dolphins to close out the year. So I'm sure that, you know, the thought there is that they win out and they finish. I mean, they're 8-6 now, so they could finish 11-6 if they went out. 11-6 is almost certainly going to get you in. There's almost no way you're missing the playoffs as an 11-6 team, even in the AFC. But ninth seed having a 68% chance to make the playoffs. The Bengals, who are currently in as, I think, the sixth seed, having a 37% chance.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Well, it's an interesting situation.
What's also interesting about that Bills projection is, I mean, the Dolphins are 10-4. Like, that's their right. final game. So, like, right. I don't know if you can say that the Bills are definitely going to win that game. And if they
I agree.
You know, that game is it's at Miami on January 7th. And right. so if they go to the division leading Tyreek Hill led, you know, potentially MVP Tyreek Hill and go win that. I mean, and don't win that game. Then the Bills, that's at least their seventh loss, which means right. they could finish at, and, you know, 10-7.
And right. like, and 10-7 with their tiebreaker situation.
Yeah. yeah. I mean, with all these other teams in the AFC that have a lot of wins.
It's not great. Yeah. It's not great. It's an interesting series of projections. It's going to be fascinating to see who gets in, who is out. One team that is out and is very likely to stay out. The Denver Broncos lost 42-17 to the Lions. They have just a 23% chance of making the playoffs. They do have a very soft schedule over the remainder of the season. But although they are closing it out against the Patriots, Chargers, and Raiders, three teams that they should be favored against and probably should beat, that game in Las Vegas is not a gimme. That's their last game of the season. And even if they win out, they're only going to finish 10-7. Their tiebreaker situation is not great. So LOL Broncos. I promised we would talk about the number one seed scenario for the Chiefs. Obviously, first thing that needs to happen there is the Chiefs need to win out. They would finish 12-5 if they do that. If they do that, then we also need the Baltimore Ravens to lose any two of their three remaining games, which is going to be tough. But they do play at the 49ers, who look completely unbeatable, versus the Dolphins, who look very good, and against the Steelers, who play in their division. You know, like, anything can happen when two AFC North teams share a cell, cuz. So, you know, we're hoping that they
second arrest the, development.
We're hoping that they're dropping games at the Niners and against the Dolphins. If that happens and the Chiefs win out, the Chiefs will finish ahead of the Ravens. Now, Chiefs would also need the Dolphins to lose one of their remaining three games, against the Cowboys, at the Ravens, or against the Bills. That would give them the same record as the Chiefs, and the Chiefs won against the Dolphins head-to-head. So versus the Cowboys, at the Ravens, versus the Bills, shoot, I mean, the Dolphins could easily drop two of those games, but we only need them to drop one. I'd right. say the Chiefs have a very good chance at least of getting the two seed if, of course, they're able to take care of business and win out.
Yeah, I mean, it's all in front of them. Like you said, it starts and ends with winning out. If they don't do that, it doesn't really matter what seed they are, because really, if they lose right. to these backup quarterbacks, these three remaining, things just aren't going to be going the way that sure. we want them to go. In.
Yeah, but hard to see a positive result in the playoffs.
It is. But if they do pull these last three games off, which I would expect them to, I mean, they certainly should, they will have the sixth consecutive 12-plus win season in 6 years with Patrick Mahomes at the helm. The Chiefs, before Patrick Mahomes, had five seasons of 12-plus wins in franchise history.
Absolutely crazy.
He would be going for his sixth, which is, as you said, absolutely crazy. And, you know, two of the – oh, no, just the one. 2016 was the only other time. I was going to say Reed had two or three outside of Mahomes, but he only had the one. Other than that, though – the bye is really interesting to me, because if there were a team in the AFC that I was really worried about playing that was in position for the bye, because right now it's Chiefs, Dolphins, Ravens, that's it. I have not a ton of concerns about the other two as far as a playoff sure. matchup on the road. We haven't seen road playoff Pat ever. And well, we've seen it in Tampa, but you know, it's something that I don't think is like the scariest proposition in the world. The worst part about it is just playing the first wild card. It's not necessarily the home away. It's that the one seed gets a free playoff win. We've talked about this a long time, and that's a huge, huge, huge advantage. It's a health advantage. It's a obvious auto advance in the playoffs. So, you know, kudos to Baltimore if they pull it off. If they can beat, you know, some combination of these teams, you know, if Baltimore beats Miami and the Chiefs win out, then that's the two right there. That's all that, right. You know, right. Then because if Miami loses that one game and the Chiefs win out, they jump them. So, like, if that happens, then okay, then we'll see Baltimore in the AFC Championship game.
Maybe and, if they get there. You know,
if we get there and if they get there.
Yeah, 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 right. If we get
but
there.
You're so. Right. Also, we talked about this last week. Baltimore blew it one time as the one, and the Chiefs ended up hosting the AFC Championship anyway. So, like,
and winning the Super Bowl.
If you get the two, then at least you're hosting everybody but the one, which means you'd have to, you know, win the wild card game and win the divisional game and then see how things shake out. But yeah, it's going to be the Chiefs have put themselves in position to battle for this thing. And I don't know if when they were losing all those games, even just right up until this week, if I thought that that was going to be the case. So we'll see how it all shakes out.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, the other thing about having to play that first game is not just health-wise and not just the fact that you have to play the game, but, you know, some of these teams at the bottom of the AFC
Jesus.
Playoff picture are, I mean,
in particular, scarier than the top.
In particular, the Bills.
Yeah.
But also the Texans. Yeah. You know, the Texans, assuming they have C.J. Stroud, and, you know, Nico Collins.
I mean, hell, dude.
Lost Tank Dell for the year, but sure, the Colts.
The Broncos.
Or the Broncos. I mean, any of those teams.
Like.
Listen, it would have been great if the Steelers had held yes. on to their 7-4 record. And they could have given us another 7-seed Patsy. And yeah, we could have played, you know, our second 2-versus-7 game against the Steelers and just kicked the shit out of them and, like, pulled all of our starters midway through the third quarter and, you know, essentially gotten a partial bye.
Better than a bye, as Nick Reichel.
And not have to worry about anything that happened in that game. But unfortunately, the Steelers have lost 3 straight games and looked terrible doing it. They have, like, a 2% chance of making the playoffs now. They blew it. So now, you know, while we don't have to worry about Joe Burrow, that's great, but Jake Browning has showed that Joe Burrow's a system quarterback, and we have to worry about Jake Browning if the Bengals make it in. You know, the Bills obviously have looked unbeatable for 3 games. Now, you know, they're the Bills, so I'm sure they'll turn back into an incompetent gibbering mess here before too long. But
give me your ideal first-round playoff matchup.
You know, I mean, the ideal first-round playoff matchup for me, honestly, of the teams that are in it,
yeah,
it's probably the Browns. But, like,
wow, I don't know if I agree with that.
But we're not going to play the Browns because they are going to be the 5-seed if they continue to win out. I mean,
I'm interested to see how we match up in 2 weeks against the Bengals.
Sure, it's a Joe Flacco thing for me, but yeah,
sure, no, yeah, that's fair. If the Chiefs look okay against the Bengals, handle business in Arrowhead,
sure, you know, that would be fun.
Then, like, if the Bengals happen to sneak back in as the 7th.
If the Chiefs beat the Bengals, though, they are probably not going to get it.
That's right? True.
I mean, that would be their 7th loss.
Yeah.
They have a terrible tiebreaker situation.
Maybe the
Colts. And obviously, if Jake Browning comes to Arrowhead and beats us, I want no part of the Bengals. God. Like, I mean, Jesus. I just – that fan base, I was really excited.
Oh, it's going to be awful if Browning does it once.
I mean, I know. Exactly. But, yeah, I just don't want any piece of that. And I don't really want a piece of the Colts. Even though I think we would beat them, they literally just beat us last year with, like, one of the worst teams in the NFL, and we have a terrible history against the Colts playoffs.
I mean,
I want no piece of playoff Gardner Minshew. So, I mean, it basically has to be Cleveland for me.
Yeah. It can't be Cleveland.
Houston. I guess.
With an injured C.J. Stroud. And we
I guess. And, I mean, it can't – I guess maybe Jacksonville as a wild card. I wouldn't feel terrible about playing them. That. Yeah.
I mean, all these teams are going to be tough outs.
There's no, people talk about how there's no great teams in the AFC, but there's a lot of pretty good teams. Yeah. I mean, like, all these teams are fine, and all these teams have looked bad at various points this season, but all these teams have looked good at various points this season too. And, you know, you just don't know which team is going to show up on Saturday or Sunday or Monday on wild card weekend. And I don't know, it's going to be tough for me to have a ton of confidence against whoever we're playing, but it's going to be interesting to see who we get. Let's talk about the game the Chiefs play this weekend, breaking the losing streak. They go to Foxborough and take down the Patriots 27-17. Taylor Swift in attendance. New England fans going nuts for Taylor. They love her there. She's played whatever their stadium is called now, Tom Brady Stadium at Foxborough, whatever. Yeah, right, exactly. HGH Field at, whatever it's called now. Taylor has played there a number of times. She was in attendance, got a lot of love from those Patriots fans out there. But your general thoughts on this game?
Well, my first thought is that it's weird to already be in the post Chiefs Patriots era.
Mm-hmm.
Like mm-hmm. it was weird. This game was weird.
It was weird.
There's just something about, Bill's hanging on, but he's already been rumored to be on the way out, and they suck. And it was like, it just didn't, obviously everyone talked about how this was the first primetime game or non-primetime game between the two since 2008, since the Bernard Pollard game.
Right.
And, it's not like it's the first one because they haven't played much. They played, I think, five games in that stretch.
Yeah.
It was two playoff games, and it was three regular season primetime games. So, like, it was just, those games always meant so much to me as a fan. They meant a lot in the pre-Mahomes era, but they obviously meant a ton in the Brady v. Mahomes era.
Right.
And so my first thought here is just mourning the loss of a good rivalry. And I don't have to mourn it too much because, fuck the Patriots forever. And I love the fact that they are the worst and everyone there hates watching their team and all that stuff. Like I hate Boston. I hate their fans. I hate a lot about the Patriots, but I sure liked when this game had juice and it had no juice. That was my first thoughts.
Yeah, I agree with that. It is interesting. We've talked about this. I mean, it is funny that, to some extent, we Patriots fans are the only fans that we can talk about, that we can talk to about,
where we are,
what our experience is like, where we are. They're obviously still ahead of us in the ring rankings, but, you win a couple of games, you have the best quarterback in the NFL and the best head coach in the NFL, and you're the team that everybody wants to beat every Sunday, and you're the team that gets constantly dissected and written off whenever you have a bad stretch, whenever you lose two games in a row, and that goes for the fans too. I mean, just our experience watching the Chiefs, watching them struggle, watching them have an inconsistent offense, and us, bemoaning it like it's the end of the world, and having people tell us like, oh, you're the Chiefs, you're fine, like, get out of here. We know the team better than you do. We're the ones watching the games every Sunday. To have people tell us that I'm sure Patriots fans would say that we weren't getting the calls. The refs were, the refs weren't favoring us. And, I mean, is there any statistical evidence to support that? No. Is there statistical evidence to support that's the case with the Chiefs? Yes. But, listen, they think that. And so, that dynamic has been really interesting, I think. But at the end of the day, this matchup did not have a ton of juice. It was a game the Chiefs should have won, and it was a game the Chiefs did win. So let's get into our old routine here. That's good to sort of get back to, what we did on this podcast for years and years, not having to worry about the losses and what we would do. We had to come up with a whole new system. It was a whole thing. Let's talk about the numbers, the figures. I'm just going to give the listeners a warning before I get into these. These skewed extremely negative for a game that the Chiefs won, but those were just the stats that I was finding this week. Per The Athletic's Robert Mays, the Chiefs are 32nd in the NFL in EPA lost due to drops, surprising no one. This actually started off as a tweet about the Jags, who are 31st in a bunch of these categories, including 31st in expected points added. Lost due to drops by the receivers. And I asked him, where do the Chiefs rank? Because it is hard to imagine them being anywhere other than 32nd. And he said, they are indeed 32nd in the NFL in that category. So that's a bummer. On that note, the Ringer's Ben Zolak tweeted out, Kadarius Toney, ninth worst in EPA per target among NFL receivers. And he was not even the worst wide receiver on the Chiefs because Sky Moore was sixth worst. He obviously went on injured reserve this week. He will not be able to improve that in the regular season. Woof, not great.
No.
We're gonna do like a reverse compliment sandwich where I start negative, I'll throw a positive one in here, and then I'll end with another negative one.
That's called a shit sandwich.
Yeah, right, exactly. Rashee Rice saw a season high 92% snap share on offense. So that's positive. He's trending up. He played 92% of the snaps, season and career high. He is PFF's fourth highest graded offensive player this year for the entire season in the fourth quarter and overtime. So all offensive players, tackles, skill players, quarterbacks, you name it, in the fourth quarter and overtime, he is their fifth highest graded player. Patrick Mahomes, by the way, is second. So I mean, he's putting the throws out there. The numbers and the results are not coming, but Pat's he is the second.
He's fourth.
I know. It's crazy. And yet the Chiefs have like lost four games in the fourth quarter because the other bozos on the team literally have not caught a single pass in the fourth quarter of the entire season. Don't check my math on that. But that's how it seems to be. He's fourth most in receiving yards in the NFL over the last month. The last four games, he has 333 receiving yards. That is fourth highest in the NFL. Pretty amazing stuff. Also amazing, but in a bad way. I'll hit you with the final stat here. ESPN's Kevin Seifert tweets, NFL officials, this was kind of just funny, threw another five flags for offensive offsides this week. They have already tripled their high for a season in this century. So most offensive offsides flags in a season since 2000. 2023, they've thrown 18, including five just this last week. 2020, they threw six. In 2002, they threw six. Those are the second highest seasons. We're already at 18, including five last week. Five is one off of their previous season high this millennium. So from 2000 to 2000 or to 2022, the season average was 1.9. I will add to Kevin's tweet, NFLpenalty.com has slightly different numbers. They show the highest season total since 2009, which is as far as it goes back, as eight in 2014. But no other season except this year above five. This year they have 17 offensive offsides penalties. The league called zero in 2021. I mean, what are we doing here? This is crazy. What is happening? What is going on?
It is crazy. I wanted to look at all this. So they've actually called 19, but the reason that the number is 18 is one of them was a declined one. So there were 19 called, 18 accepted. And of the 19 called so far this year, 11 of the 19 are on offensive linemen for lining up over center. And eight are on split, either wide receivers or tight ends. So, and 11 before last week, and then eight in weeks 14-3 and 15-5. So in the last 2 weeks, they called those eight. Three this year have been called on Landon Dickerson of the Philadelphia Eagles on tush push plays. He's been lined up offside three times. And then two were called on Green Bay's John Runyon in the first half of a game on 11-5 on November 5th. So that's kind of the only time that one person's been slammed a couple times. 11 of the penalties have been on third and one or fourth and one. Four of them were on third and one, seven of them were on fourth and one. So that's just kind of the profile of how these things have been called. You know, it seems to me, at least checking when they were called early on in the year, that they started off being called on linemen and being called for specifically the first one of the year was on Landon Dickerson of the Eagles. And then it just kind of became this thing where they needed to call it, you know, on everybody. And there was one field goal that was a 55-yard field goal by Chris Boswell that was good, and then it was nullified by the offensive offsides, and he missed the 60-yarder. Not a surprise there. The Broncos were the only other team besides the Chiefs and the Steelers to lose points based on this play. They had a 1-yard touchdown run in that Detroit blowout this week that got nullified by offensive offsides, and then they kicked field goals, so they lost 4 points there. But notably, the Chiefs are the only team to be trailing or tied in the fourth quarter to get a call like this on a touchdown play. And obviously we all remember how that went. So a lot of hand wringing on this one, a lot of interesting conversation about whether it's a trend or whether it's more of a blip. Like maybe the league just wants people to calm down on it, so they're going to call it heavy for a spell. And then they realize that the product is obviously not enhanced by this call, and maybe if they're getting guys to finally realize, like, yeah, we're going to call you in big spots, maybe they'll clean up the lining up. I don't know. I hate the penalty. I think it's dumb. I also don't understand why it's not illegal formation. Why offensive offsides is its own thing.
Its own penalty. Sure.
You know, like, I think that's an illegal formation. If you're not lined up where you're supposed to, then, like, it doesn't really matter if you're over the neutral zone or whatever. Like, I don't know. It's a dumb penalty. I hate it, and I wish that it would go away.
Yep. Yep. And I wish it had gone away 2 weeks ago, and we would be talking about still probably one of the plays of our lives, at least regular season only. We've won two Super Bowls in the last 4 years, so, like, we can't get too overboard with the play, as cool as it was. But we get to get back this week, my friend, to the Chiefs system. We were doing the Mac the last couple of weeks. Mourn, accuse, cope. Didn't do much for me. I mean, you know, it was a helpful rubric for us to sort of process our feelings and get through these losses. But I am very excited that we are back to the Chiefs system and our winning ways this week.
Let's get into it. The Chiefs system, if you don't remember, and I wouldn't blame you for not remembering, it sure has been a minute since the Chiefs have used this system to defeat an opponent in a National Football League game. That is, of course, the Chiefs system modeled off the Dennis system from our favorite show, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. It starts with the C, and that's create drama. And we talked about this in our opening thoughts of this game. Chiefs versus Patriots. Remember when that game mattered? Yeah, not anymore. Once again, the crowd wasn't into it. The announcers weren't into it. The players weren't into it. It was actually kind of spooky to me. It was like, you know, like, it should have mattered. It was a week 15 game in the NFL in a season that the Chiefs are fighting for their, you know, their lives with the seeding and all that. And it just, we have to manufacture the drama because it wasn't happening anywhere other than on the field. So we'll start with Harrison Butker's first missed field goal. Womp womp, 39 yards on the Chiefs' opening drive. Are we in for another stinker? Drama created.
This took on an even more dramatic tinge post-game because Mark Daniels of MassLive.com reported today that according to multiple sources, NFL officials didn't properly inflate the kicking balls at Gillette Stadium before the Patriots matchup versus the Chiefs. Deflategate part two, Harrison Butker perfect on the season, and then they stuck him with a underinflated ball and he misses his first field goal of the year. Is that a coincidence? Patriots. I don't think
Definitely not. Definitely not. They're always up to no good. Yeah, that's just what they do. Clearly
that a tiger can't change his stripes. And you know, if you are the New England Patriots, I mean, listen, they can't alter their nature, and their nature is to be naughty and sneaky. And they cost Harrison Butker a perfect season, you know, something that essentially has never been done in the history of the NFL. I mean, to be perfect up to this point and miss a 39 yarder now was, you know, windy in Foxborough. Chad Ryland, the Patriots kicker, who
sucks. Is that? He sucks. They used a fourth rounder on him, and he's like 11 for 17 this year or something. He's terrible.
He missed a 41 yarder on the very next drive after Butker missed the 39 yarder. But I mean, listen, creating drama doesn't get more dramatic than the Patriots cheating again
and costing Butker's perfect season. Another Deflategate. We'll see if anybody that gets picked up anywhere other than Mass Live, but sure is, you know, now that the Patriots suck, it's more funny than it is, like, you know, they're obviously not stealing wins.
I mean, they're telling on themselves this time, at least. Mass Live reporting it, but
they're still all sick of everyone there anyway. They all want to.
Sure, of course. They want a clean house.
Yes. So handle adversity, H in the Chiefs system. Were they in for a stinker? No, not really. The Patriots went 3-and-out. As you mentioned, Ryland missed a field goal, and then they went 3-and-out again. And that was how the Patriots chose to spend their time with the football in the first quarter. After the initial missed field goal by the Chiefs, they did march down the field, and they answered by hitting the Patriots with a play that I'm still not really sure what happened or how it happened. It was a Clyde Edwards-Helaire 48-yard screen. So adversity was handled 7-0 after the first quarter, but buddy, we have to break the screen down a little bit more. What, how, when, who, where, why? I don't get it. They obviously schemed everybody left. Andy brought out his screen god mechanics and went back to the right with Clyde. They had four offensive linemen rumbling, stumbling, bumbling down the field with Clyde. But what was funny was that Clyde couldn't outrun his offensive lineman. Right. He was lagging behind them. And there, while there was no one on the right side of the field, and I don't think he got touched for the first 25 yards or so, how many running backs in the NFL take that play longer than, or I guess I should reverse it. How many running backs in the NFL go shorter than 48 yards on that exact play?
It's not very many, if it's any at all. I mean, there was nobody there. And even to get to 48 yards, he had to break a tackle because somebody snuck in behind the offensive linemen who were so far downfield that, you know, somebody was able to then get into the play from behind and hit Clyde. And, you know, credit to him for breaking the tackle, but like, buddy, Isaiah Pacheco certainly scores on that play. Jerick McKinnon certainly scores on that play. I mean, I think
Zeke Chris Elliott's, Jones scores, I think, on that play.
Yeah, I think he does.
He's got that dog.
And not only that, but like, I mean, you're getting outrun by your offensive lineman, and like those guys are like twice your weight, and you know, that's not how it's supposed to go. I don't want to shit on the guy, but
I agree. We'll do plenty. We'll shine Clyde up.
Sure, we will definitely shine him up. But what is equally confusing to me about this play? You asked how it happened. Where is Andy Reid, the screen god, been? We've been talking about this for on our radar for like a couple of seasons now. Mm-hmm. You know, first season with Patrick Mahomes, 2018, they were doing crazy stuff with screens, and really it kept working through really about the beginning part of the 2020 season. And then it feels like the screen game completely disappeared for a while. Yeah. We saw some glimpses of it again last year. We haven't really seen it very much this year, at least not successfully. I mean, I can't recall off the top of my head the last time Chiefs broke a huge play like this on a screen. And then it was like, of all the teams to do it against, of all the defensive coordinators to do it against, you're doing it against Bill Belichick. You're doing it with Clyde Edwards-Helaire is the starting running back. If you can spring Clyde for a 50-yard gain with the screen against, like, the greatest defensive coach in the history of the NFL, like, why are we doing that more with Isaiah Pacheco? Like, I just don't, you know, like, I feel like, you know, maybe it's one of those freak things where they just weren't prepared for it because they hadn't seen it in a while, and the Chiefs just, you know, did their advanced scouting right and called a play that they knew would work against the Patriots. But like, it feels like if you can scheme Clyde open for a 50-yard gain at any point against any team, but especially against this team in this situation, you should be able to like go back to that well more than once or twice a game. Well, and you know, for good results.
You know, when we saw it the most in the Chiefs era was the Alex Smith era.
Yes.
And it's funny because when you think about the mentality behind that offense needed the smoke and mirrors. You know, credit to Alex Smith, good quarterback, could make some throws, especially later on in his tenure when Pat was breathing down his neck. But the point is, Andy had to be creative with that team to get the points, and he was, and he did, and it was successful. But because the Chiefs weren't winning Super Bowls and they didn't have an MVP, a quarterback, they didn't get the special scouting treatment that the Mahomes Chiefs get, which is calendar circled. You know, the champs are coming in town. We got to throw everything at them. We got to scout. We got to watch every play they've ever run or ever dreamed of. That's how teams scout the Chiefs now. And so I do kind of wonder if it was a combination of Andy going away from it, because when they tried to run some screens for a while and they were just blown up every single time because the other teams were like, yeah, we get it. You're going to run screens. We're not going to let you do it. Then the Chiefs maybe started to drift away from them. But now the Chiefs are struggling a little bit on offense.
I know.
And, you know, they're
bring it back.
They're kind of reminiscent of the Alex Smith offenses right now, which is...
Alex Smith had an offense that didn't score a wide receiver touchdown.
Yeah, right. And how do you think they did that and still scored points?
I know.
Screens to running backs. I mean, that
And they also had Jamal Charles, but like, you know...
But, you know, like they could still get some get some guys open if they needed to. So, all that to say, for the handling of adversity, the Chiefs threw the big play to Clyde. It was 7-0 after the first quarter. For Inspire Hope, I promised we would shine him up. Let's stick with our guy, man of the hour. How about Clyde? How about Clyde Edwards-Helaire? He had 17 touches in this game, 6 of which went for more than 3 yards. And I know what you're saying. 6 out of 17 touches for more than 3 yards. That doesn't sound like a very impressive performance, but in the context of this being Clyde Edwards-Helaire, that is his Heisman performance. That is absolutely as explosive as this guy's been since certainly early on in his rookie year. You know, the 11 plays outside of his six best, he had 9 yards on 11 touches. Calm down, Sean McDermott, not that 9-11. But in his six best plays, they went for 92 yards and a touchdown. Clyde Edwards-Helaire went for 92 yards on six plays, and including a touchdown. So, like,
that's crazy. That, for Inspire that Hope, is hard to believe.
Which is the eye in the Chiefs system, you know, there's certainly a bit of inspirational performance here from Clyde. The guys talk constantly. Every time Clyde is brought up, it's about how much everyone loves Clyde as a dude. Like, just Andy says he's just this beam of positivity, that he's never complaining about anything, that he's always happy to see everybody. Like, you know, we have probably spent as much airtime trashing Clyde Edwards-Helaire as any single player in the history of this podcast. I mean, I would venture he's probably number one.
Yeah, and probably.
And we always try and make it a point that it's the football player that we're trashing. It is his ability on the field that has not been very good. I have no problems with Clyde as a dude. I do think he works hard. I mean, from everything that everyone has said, that his, you know, his off the field properties are good. It's just that it hasn't really translated for one reason or another. It certainly translated this game. It certainly inspired some hope that even when Pacheco comes back, that if Pacheco has to sit out a drive and whatever, you know, we've been happy with McKinnon's performance. So it's not like Clyde's needed, but if they still want to go to him, then, you know, maybe he can bust out some of these plays that were, frankly, on his career highlight reel. I would say 50% of his career highlight reel might have been created in this game on those six plays. Like, he was good.
Sure. Yeah, no, I think that's completely fair, and we'll talk about him in the awards segment as well. But how about engage physically? You know, I feel like this might have been a little bit of a struggle for you. What'd you come up with?
Yeah, it was certainly a struggle. Most of the time, this is about how the Chiefs engage physically with the opponent and how they really stamp their mark on a game and pop them and do something that, you know. But in this game, I reviewed the tape and I was going through the play-by-play and I was trying to find something where I was like, oh, this would be a really good engage physically. And what I kept coming back to was a negative. So we'll talk about the negative here in this segment of engage physically. But it was two plays that were just infuriating, and they were Sky Moore's fumble in his one touch of the game. Now, not to kick a man when he's down. I know he's on IR. We'll kind of talk about Sky here in a second later, but that was extremely furious, infuriating, and made me want to engage physically with either my wall or Sky or something and rage about it. And then, of course, the dude that's still getting lit up by everybody after this game, Kadarius Toney. I'm a little surprised that it's taken this long in the recap to mention the Joker, but boy, he just doesn't have the concentration required of an NFL wide receiver. And I specifically say concentration because he does have the physical tools. He engages physically. Like, that is something that has never been an issue with him. His twitchiness and his speed and some different things about, you know, his God-given gifts. But one of his God-given gifts is most certainly not watching the ball and catching it and using your hands and securing it. Because when that ball came in from Pat and hit him right on the hands on a crosser, that should have just been an easy dump over. He just popped it two or three times, pushed it up in the air, and let the Patriots run right under it and pick it off for at least the second direct interception that he's caused this year after the Lions pick six in week one. I was trying to think if maybe he's popped another one that led to a pick. I don't really think so, but the point being, he's struggling. And this also made me want to engage physically with a lot of inanimate objects and bash them and smash them because boy, just a struggle right now for Kadarius Toney.
Yeah, it also made Patrick Mahomes want to engage him physically, it seemed like, from the conversation or the reaction shot that was shown on the broadcast on the sideline of Mahomes. You know, some lip reading there. Clearly not happy with the situation with Kadarius Toney, which I don't blame him. I mean, like, how could you? He It's tough because at various points this year, you can tell that Mahomes wants to go to him because he's getting open. And, you know, Sky Moore isn't getting open. You know, Marquez Valdes-Scantling isn't consistently getting
Who?
open. Exactly. But you can tell that, I mean, like, I'm sure the Kadarius Toney situation is obviously the experience is frustrating for us as viewers, but you can tell that it's frustrating for Mahomes because he wants to throw to Tony because Tony can get open and
Yeah.
he knows that Tony can do things after the catch that other guys like Sky can't do. And the problem is, every time he gives him a chance, like almost every single time he's given him
Yeah.
a chance to make a
He
play this
blows.
year, he's blown it.
Yeah.
And in a couple of cases, he's botched it so spectacularly that, I mean, and obviously week one, it literally cost them the game. Like he cost them a touchdown. He put a touchdown on the board with his stone hands. And, you know, this game, it didn't end up proving to be fatal to the final score, but the Chiefs were up, I mean, 27 to 10. And with the way that the Patriots were moving the ball, or I should say, not moving the ball,
Yeah.
that felt like an insurmountable lead. And especially if the Chiefs had gone down on that drive and put some points on the board, put some more points on the board, you know, you get up to 30 plus points. It's this Patriots team. There's no chance the Patriots were coming back and they were scoring more than 30 plus. I'm actually going to look right now. How many times do you think they've scored more than 30 points this year? The 2023 Patriots.
I believe they did not score 30 when they scored the most points in the season when they beat the Bills 29-25 or whatever that was. They're when they beat the
That's
Bills earlier
correct.
this year.
They
And
have not scored 30 a single time this year.
can you tell me what that score was? Did I get it?
It was 29 to 25,
Hell yeah, got it. Still
and
got it, baby.
that was their highest scoring output of the season. And their second highest scoring output of the season was 21
Yeah, they're not a
against
good offense. And
Steelers.
in fact,
And
they're maybe
they've
the worst
only
offense.
broken 21 of their time. It was against the Eagles. So, like, you know, if you score on this drive, the point is the game is well out of reach.
There's
Like,
9 minutes
you have a
left in the fourth
100%
quarter,
chance of winning the game.
and this pick was at the Chiefs' 29-yard line,
I mean,
and
it just.
Patriots went two plays and scored a touchdown and
Right.
turned this into a 10-point game, and
You're
at least,
gifting them points.
yeah, and at least made the Chiefs have to, wonder about, okay, if we don't score on this next drive, like, they turned a non-game into a game. And by they, I mean Kadarius Toney. And it all comes back to that. And there are parts of this where, for Mahomes himself, I know he doesn't talk about this type of stuff often, but clearly he's always got the ghost of Tom Brady, and he's always got the ghost of winning a bunch of rings and as much as he possibly can all the time in the back of his mind. And losing a game hurts his chances of having a better playoff positioning, potentially a bye, potentially a Super Bowl. Like that, it
Sure,
has a ripple effect. It's not just losing a game if you go 6-11 or whatever. Like this is a every game the Chiefs lose matters a lot. And I also think part of the frustration, if Tony was the only guy struggling, and if the Chiefs had Kelce and Tyreek and some other guys, and the Chiefs had weapons, and every time it was kind of like how Mecole Hardman is, where even when the rest of the offense was clicking, you still kind of didn't really feel that it was working with Mecole a lot of times.
right.
Pat didn't get nearly as frustrated, although he did at times, but he didn't get nearly as frustrated with Mecole because it wasn't everyone. It's
Right.
almost like Pat's like, I need somebody. And when I
Right.
throw to you, if you fuck up, then where else can I go? I can't go to
Right.
MVS. I can't go to Sky. I can't, you know, he's almost feeling
Right.
like the walls are closing in. And so
Right.
part of that frustration is just this panic of like, oh my God, no one on this team is stepping up to the plate. Obviously, he's still
Right.
got Trav, but the other teams know he has Trav. And the other teams are
Right.
double and triple teaming the 33-year-old, 34-year-old, and expecting, you know, someone else to win is just not working right now. So I get it where Pat was frustrated. I know some of it was directly at Tony, but some of it's just the situation. His situation right now is unbelievable.
Yeah, no, I get it. Engage physically is usually a positive trait for the Chiefs. It was
Yeah.
not in this game at all.
No, but we can talk about finishing strong and really the second half, which has been a big bugaboo for the Chiefs. The Chiefs had a 14 to 10 lead at halftime in this that became 27 to 10 at the end of the third quarter. They had two
That's
field
good.
goals, yeah, by butt kicker on the uninflated balls after he missed that early one. He hit from 29 And he hit a 54-yarder in Foxborough on a not regulation ball. That's sure. a hell of a kick. That could be the greatest kick in NFL history, depending on the inflation numbers. And then, of course, Clyde, once again, had – they called him Minitron because he had a – he mossed a guy. He got up, you know, he has one of the biggest verticals on the team for being a short guy. And Pat was scrambling around from the 6-yard line and threw a ball up there. And normally you would expect a guy like Kelsey or someone to jump up and get it. And Clyde climbed the ladder and got up and came down with a touchdown in the third quarter. And so the Chiefs did finish strong in that second half in a situation that they have been routinely putting up goose eggs. And so that was nice to see that they stretched that 4-point lead way out to 17 in the third quarter.
Well, and not only that, but they obviously, they had the ball on the Patriots 6 at the end of the game, and they could have scored again. So, yep. You know, that's
like
that
the Jets
was,
game. Yeah.
That was the defense turning the Patriots over on downs as they were kind of making a last ditch attempt to move the ball forward. And Andy Reid said after the game that, you know, you don't run the score up on, he said on Bill Belichick. Now, Andy would not run the score up on anyone. But
no. In fact, Andy does the opposite of running the score up. He sometimes runs score down. Him back in. He sure. runs the score down. And
he runs the score down.
Your team doesn't feel too bad about getting their asses kicked by the Chiefs and wants to make sure it was a good, hard-fought, close game, even when it shouldn't. So,
yeah, that's right. And Pat feels the same way, as he's told us on several occasions. He wants the game to be dramatic. So
it's just what he does. Know,
that's just what he does. So, I mean, the finishing strong defense came together. Obviously, it was great to see the Chiefs come out and, you know, really put some points together in the third quarter. It was funny because James Palmer had a report before the game where, you know, he kind of said, the issue is the Chiefs have been starting slow, really slow. And then, you know, of course, people pointed out that the Chiefs finishing slow has also been a problem. So that second, third quarter, that's the sweet spot for us, right? So
they have the most points in the NFL in the last 2 minutes of the first half, which is a very specific moment in time. But the Chiefs do lead the NFL in first half 2 minutes scoring. So they do peak in the middle. And then beginning and ends tend to kind of peter out, which means for Separate Entirely, I tried to make it about this game, but sure. they didn't particularly separate in this game. They had the 17-point lead. The Patriots scored in the fourth. They made it 10. So instead, I want to talk slightly shift to what this game and this win meant by separating entirely in the AFC West. Because as we saw, the Broncos, when they don't get 3+50 turnovers on their side of the ball, they tend to not be a very good football team. And that happened.
Shocking.
Yeah, right. Imagine that. That happened once again with the Detroit Lions. They blew them out. And so with the Chiefs win and the Lions loss, the Chiefs separated entirely from the AFC West, because now 2 games up with 3 to play means that any 1 win by the Chiefs or any 1 loss by the Broncos is going to seal this baby up for the 8th straight AFC West title for the Chiefs. Just an unbelievable run of separating entirely from the AFC West. They've done it over and over and over again. Even, you know, some years where it seems like the division was all in and they were all going to come after the Chiefs and give them their best shot. Other years where it seems like all the division is a joke. Either way, no matter how the division lines up, the Chiefs just managed to find a way to win it. And they separated entirely in this one.
It's been cool to see the Chiefs separate entirely for the 8th straight AFC West title, because in 2015, the Chiefs had 8 AFC West titles and every other team in the division had 15.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've talked about this on the show. That's not because the Chiefs had a bad record. To the contrary, the Chiefs, even several years ago, had winning records against all of these teams head to head in the AFC West. They weren't, you know, dramatic leads over these teams like they are now in the Mahomes era, because he's just been adding to that for 6 years. But the Chiefs, you know, after a couple of years in the Andy Reid era, were, you know, in the red against Art in the black, which one of those is good? In the black.
Red's bad, black's good.
Yeah, they were in the black against all of these teams. And yet, because they were finishing second, you know, every year, and these teams were finishing first, the 15 times that they each did it, the Chiefs had a huge deficit in AFC West titles. And now, 8 years later, 6 years with Mahomes, 2 of Alex Smith, they are going to have a lead for the first time, I'm sure, probably since the AFC West was founded. We may have won one, you know, there in the beginning, but this will be the first time that the Chiefs are going to be the first team to get to 16 when, you know, 8 years ago they were at 8 and everybody else was at 15. So pretty good way to separate entirely there. By the end of the Mahomes era, they will have separated entirely from every other team in the AFC West in terms of division titles. They'll probably win the AFC West every single year that Mahomes is the quarterback.
Sure.
So by the time he retires, we'll have probably 30 division titles.
And then Bronze will take over.
Sure, and then Bronze will take over, and these teams will be all sitting at 15. And we'll say we went from 8 to 30, and you guys are still sitting at 15. It's going to be hilarious.
15 is an appropriate number, obviously, for Pat.
Perfect.
And it's just, I wonder, and I don't really even wonder this, but a team going from 7 fewer division titles than everyone else in their division, and a long-running division at that, to number one in only 8 years, I mean, it's
can't
impossible.
Have ever happened.
It can't have ever happened. It's absolutely crazy that the Chiefs were so far behind, and now they just strung them all together, just 8 in a row, bang, bang, bang. So good for them for separating entirely. That is the Chiefs system. They used it once again. We might have had to stretch a little bit on some of these weird, wacky Patriots games here to make it work, but that still works. Works every time.
Let's hit the awards real quick. We've got five-star men. We've got trash men.
I'm the trash man. I come out, I throw trash all over the ring, and then I start eating garbage.
And we've got wild cards.
Wild card, bitches! Yeah!
I'll kick us off with the five-star man. I'm going to pick Willie Gay. I felt like obligated to pick somebody on the defensive side of the ball because I feel like our awards are skewed towards offensive players. You know, that's been the sex. That's been the sexy part of the Chiefs franchise since you and I started doing this podcast. We like the offense. We like watching Patrick Mahomes. We don't like as much this year watching his supporting cast. So it only makes sense that I'd pick someone from the defense here. I'm going to go with Willie Gay. The team allowed 206 total yards in this game. They would have pitched a shutout in the second half, but for that Kadarius Toney drop that turned into an interception and gave the Patriots a really short field that gave them their only score of the second half. But Willie had his first INT of the year. Great play by him.
Giving
the Chiefs a shorter field coming out of the half. Patriots' first drive out of halftime when it was still a 7-point game. The Chiefs came out and scored, got it to 17. And then the Patriots, you know, had a chance to respond, could have gone down and scored again. And instead, very first play of the Patriots' first drive of the second half, Willie Gay gets it and returns it for 24 yards. The Chiefs end up scoring the Clyde Edwards-Helaire touchdown on that play and never look back. So five-star man, Willie Gay.
Yep, good pick. Aminihu was mic'd up for this game, and I cracked up when after Willie picked it and he ran it all the way down to the six. And then Aminihu's first words to him, he comes up and he goes, "How come you ain't score?" Like he was giving him shit for it. Willie goes, "I tried. Right. I tried, man. It was fun." Good pick there. I could have very easily chosen Rashee Rice for this game. He had 9 mm-hmm. catches for 91 yards and a touchdown. He's been great. He's stepped up in a role that sorely needed an alpha, and he's been that guy. And we talked about him a little bit earlier in the numbers and the figures and all the credit to him. But of course, because we've given this man so much shit over the last couple of years, we could not pass up the opportunity to give him his shine when it was due. So step on up to the plate, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. You are a five-star man for probably the first time since your rookie year, I would guess. Just
hit
check without really even thinking about it. That's got to be the last time he was really any good at all. But I'm not here to talk shit. I'm here to say that he was great. Pacheco was out, and the Chiefs needed a guy to tote the rock. And between the long screen and the big jump touchdown, like those are two of the best plays Clyde's ever had. So much, much shout out to him. I hope I can give him a five-star man one more time in the future, but we'll see if he can make that possible. But for now, Clyde, good job, buddy.
It's a big, it is a big moment for somebody who was a healthy scratch in the Super Bowl last year.
He's had a rough go.
A former first-round pick to healthy scratch in the Super Bowl, and you know, obviously, that was his first Super Bowl win. Because he was part of the team that got blown out in Tampa. It's a nice turnaround for him. I'm not going to glow about him too much because I still have gripes about some of the ways that he played in this game, but we had to do it. You would get it. You guys would have eviscerated us if we hadn't given Clyde his five-star man award. He did. He did.
Yeah,
he played a good game.
That being said, we are going to shift some stuff around. So the trash man,
okay,
as you all know, for many weeks now, I think six or so, has been our honorary Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Sky Moore Trash Man Awards. Those are done. They're no longer. Clyde got himself out of the doghouse here, and so we scratched him off.
He got a five-star man. So he
got a five-star man. He can't be an honorary trash man and a five-star man. And to be honest with you, I'm tired of piling on Sky. The kid's been through a tough run with the Chiefs, and obviously the IR hurts and all that stuff. I don't think he's very good at football, obviously. That's why he was an honorary trash man. But that being said, now that he is on the IR, now that we can...
We don't want to kick a guy while he's down.
No, you got to kind of put him in the rear view. I'm pretty sure he's played his last down as a Chief, I think, in my gut. And so because of that, I don't want to mention it anymore or harp on it anymore. So we are back to just trash men. We are no longer having honorary. Now, maybe if Kadarius Toney keeps this antics up, or if some other, someone else can come along and swoop one of these honoraries away. But for now, who is your standard trash man?
I mean, it's got to be Kadarius Toney. He's the new whipping boy. I mean, this is a podcast that does skew heavily towards positivity when it comes to the Chiefs. And
it's always sunny.
I like Kadarius Toney's potential. I will say, friend of the podcast, Dan Harms, has been tweeting out clips of Kadarius Toney doing his thing, likes what he's seeing, thinks we need to get Kadarius Toney the ball more. And on almost every level, analytically, I agree with what he's saying. Because again, he is the guy on the offense, besides Rashee Rice and Travis Kelce, that gets open. And you need a third guy on the offense besides Rashee Rice and Travis Kelce who can get open. He also is the guy that, can make people miss. And he can make explosive plays. So, yes, I want to give that guy the rock. But my heart says, punt this guy into the sun, get him off the team, and end his career in the National Football League. Because, another just horrific performance in this game. Two receptions on four targets, 5 yards, and of course the brutal drop that Sam Monson of PFF described it as being like, he's like a cartoon character at this point. He's like Wile E. Coyote. Yeah. And, he just is basically inventing new ways to egregiously fuck up a play. Like, if you were to tell an NFL football player, like, I want you to go out and play your position, but, like, I want you to actually sabotage the team as much as possible without anybody knowing that you're doing it. This is what it would look like.
Yep.
Like, it's handing really hard. Really hard to it's even if you were doing it on purpose, it would be really hard to have a couple of plays this year. Tyreek did it 2 years ago.
He did.
But a couple of plays this year where you are not only dropping the ball, but in the course of dropping the ball, giving the ball to the other team. And it obviously worked out okay in the sense that, Tyreek is going to lead the NFL in receiving this year. The Chiefs made it to the AFC Championship game that year and then won the Super Bowl the following year. But, Kadarius Toney's the easy choice. I just don't see who else I could possibly pick in that situation.
Yeah, if Kadarius Toney was playing like Tyreek Hill, other than got away with it because he was fucking Tyreek Hill. And
he didn't really get away with it. I mean, the fan base was livid. I will say we on this podcast gave Tyreek a ton of grace because he's always been pretty sure-handed and he's amazing. He's a great football player. But Kadarius Toney, not there.
No, not there. I will pick for my trash man a guy that I just haven't seen. Not only I haven't seen a lot of positive out of lately, but that I feel like the last 8 or 9 plays I remember from Blake Bell have all been negatives, have all been turnovers, fumbles, drops, pick, whatever it was. It just feels like he's lost the ability to add positively to an NFL roster. When they were trying to bring Blake Bell in as the belldozer, which, first of all, again, doesn't work anymore because he's not in college because everyone's already bigger than him in the NFL.
Yeah, but
when they were trying those sneak plays with him, none of those really worked. They tried a little pitch play with him. That one didn't work. And then they've just tried a bunch of, even now, standard passes. This one in this game was 3 yards in front of the line of scrimmage. And he didn't come back towards the ball when Mahomes threw it. He just kind of sat back and let the Patriots defender rip it directly out of his hands for a pick. And it was, that was another case where I was like, look, man, I'm just done with Blake Bell on this team. I'm just done with trying to get him involved in even one play, because that one play was shitty and bad and was a turnover and could have been in a closer game against a better team, could have been a game-losing turnover just the way the Kadarius Tonys could have. And the only difference between Blake Bell and Kadarius Toney is Blake Bell doesn't even do what Kadarius Toney does. He doesn't even present the ceiling there. He's all floor, and you can't have a guy that's all floor. So Blake Bell, can't. Trash man, buddy.
If you have a guy that's all floor, he's a trash man, because that's where the trash goes. I mean, it goes in the trash, but
first
if it were to go somewhere else, it would go on the floor. You know, I mean, anyway, give me your wild card.
So my wild card, anytime you have a player that passes the ball that doesn't normally pass the ball, I feel like that's like my wild card bells just go off. Just ding, ding, ding. I got it. And of course, everyone remembers in this game that included a Jerick McKinnon passing touchdown to Rashee Rice on the first touchdown of the game. And great story by Rashee after the game. He was talking about how when they run it in practice, it's always a handoff. And Jet like kind of gave him a little bit of like, during practice, he was like, I'm gonna pitch this. And then during the game, they like gave each other the head nod. He was like, pitch, because Rashee was chasing, not really chasing, but just past Dwayne Bowe for the most receiving touchdowns by a rookie in Chiefs history. And Jet said that he knew he needed as many touchdowns as he could get, as many receiving touchdowns as he could get for that record. So instead of handing it off, why not just give him a pop and give him a little touchdown catch instead of a run? And that's exactly what they did. That's extreme wildcard behavior, to be thinking about what type of stats you need instead of just trying to
football
definitely. Game. And I mean, you know, that's an old savvy vet move. That's like Jerick McKinnon's like, look, man, I don't have much time left in this league. I'm going to get real weird with it, and I'm going to be a wild card. That's what he did.
Yeah, that is a great way to describe it. Getting real weird with it. Speaking of which, the Chiefs center on this play was Joe Tooney. He snapped the ball on this play, which yes.
Oh, and, right, because Patrick played fullback. I totally forgot about that.
Correct. Yeah. And the only reason they did that, I mean, there wasn't anything as part of the design that necessarily needed Joe Tooney instead of Creed Humphrey to be snapping the ball, except that I guess when they were messing around with this play, now obviously the pitch was sort of a little improvisational move. Travis, in fact, on his podcast said that he had never seen them from the pitch before. And he was going to have to ask Jet if it was just something that he sort of made up on the spot. It sounds like that may have been what happened. But the Joe Tooney thing was Patrick, just in practice this week, was like, oh, you know, Joe Tooney used to play for the Patriots. So, like, why don't we put him in at center? You know, for one of these goal line plays, just for him to get a chance to snap the ball at Foxborough again. And he obviously played some center for the Patriots. He played all over their offensive line. I think he actually played all 5 offensive line spots for the Patriots during his time in New England. So that's like a huge wild card move where you're having somebody other than your regular center snap the ball just because, like, he used to play there. And a big time wild card play and a big time wild card player, Jerick McKinnon. I'm gonna take Noah Gray. So Noah Gray had a catch on the opening drive, the opening play of the game, 32 yards. Yeah. He had one catch after this for 5 yards. And I think I've selected Noah Gray as a wild card at least one other time in the past month. I'd have to go back and check the standings. Right. But it kind of feels like at times the Chiefs would like Noah Gray to be like
better than
wide receiver 2.
Yeah.
On the scene. Is that they're sort of like, well, we've got Rashee Rice and we've got Travis Kelce.
Yeah.
We know none of these wide receivers are any good. Let's see if Blake Bell can do something cool. You know, I remember when we recorded the podcast when we drafted him. I mean, he's not incredibly big for a tight end, but he's got movement skills. He can catch the ball. He's pretty explosive for, you know, a guy's size. He has a a great pass catching pedigree from college. I mean, that's really like that's what he did. So, you know, it's all there. And when you see him, you know, on this one play every couple of weeks, you're like, yeah, I mean, get it. Like, I don't understand why this isn't a bigger part of the offense. But that's what makes him a wild card player. Like, he'll show up. He's sort of like the tight end version of MVS. Like, he'll show up. He'll do something cool, except without the bat. Like, because he only gets involved. Yeah, he doesn't mess up every other time that he gets the ball. It's just like he'll get the ball a couple of times a game and good things happen. And you'll be like, why don't we see that more? Now, with MVS, we know why we don't see it more. It's because the other times in the game, he's getting the ball and he's dropping it, or, you know, he's running the wrong route, or he's not being physical at the catch point, and, you know, or he's looking around trying to get a flag when he could just, you know, catch the football and make a play. So I don't want to make that comparison, but in the sense that he shows up like a couple of times a game, you know, maybe once every couple of weeks, and you're like, huh, yeah, it would be cool if we saw that more in the offense. That's wild card behavior. And I would be interested to see if that is something that that we see an uptick in. Because he did have a pretty high snap count in this game. You know, it felt like, in fact, friend of the pod, Randy Cerley, was tweeting about this, that like kind of feels like the Chiefs' plan is, you know, Travis Kelce and Rashee Rice, and then like, oh, you know, maybe we could throw another tight end out there, and maybe it's going to be Noah Gray, and that's going to be the offense. So he was my pick for the wild card. That'll do it for our awards. That will close the book on the Chiefs' 27-17 win over the New England Patriots. Let's preview quickly Chiefs versus Raiders. There's not a whole lot to talk about with this game. The Chiefs have already played the Raiders once this season. They played them in week 12. So pretty recently, just back at the end of November, November 26th, the Chiefs won that game 31-17, a pretty comfortable victory for the Chiefs after they fell down 14-0. And then they got right after that. An infuriating game to watch in, you know, the first couple of drives, but then they did get right in that game. The Raiders obviously fired Josh McDaniels earlier this season, but the Chiefs didn't even see Josh McDaniels this year. They only saw Antonio Pierce. He was the coach when the Chiefs last played the Raiders. So, you know, they kind of already, it's not like it's a new guy in there who they have no exposure to and they don't know what to expect, because they've already played the Antonio Pierce Raiders once this season. It's not going to be like when they go and play the Chargers and, you know, Giff Smith is out there coaching the Chargers, right? True wild card. Okay, Jif Smith. There's two F's in there. That definitely should be.
No, it's Giff. I'm kidding.
All right. Oh, my God. I can't even do it. But in any case, the Chiefs clinch the AFC West with a play and a playoff berth. If they win this game, all they have to do is win. They win the division. It's over. I don't know what else to say about this game. It's just, it's a Chiefs Raiders game. I guess the Raiders are coming out, you know, a blowout win over the Chargers, but
major end. The Raiders, when they, after they fired McDaniels, they got to play the two New York teams back to back, which is, anyone who knows anything about NFL football knows that is a good thing to have. And so they won both of those games, and they were feisty when they beat the Jets in that second game. You know, the Raiders were one of these, they were 5-5. They were hanging around. They were right there in the playoff hunt. And then they dropped a game to the Dolphins, barely, 20-13, admirable performance. And then after the 14-0 lead got blown and they lost 31-17 to the Chiefs, they had a horrible loss to the Vikings of 3-0, one of the lowest, obviously the lowest scoring game in NFL history. And after that, they then go out when they have nothing to play for, because after those three straight losses, they're sitting there at 5-8 and completely out. And then, of course, the Chargers, who were one game worse and completely out, then they blow them. So all that is to say, even though the Raiders are just coming off of a 63-21, what should be like a momentum building, feel good type of win, they don't have anything to play for, man. They're 6-8. Like, they're not going to, you're obviously not going to make the playoffs with 8 losses. And, and at that point, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to get a worse draft pick in the final games against the Chiefs, Colts, and Broncos? Like, do you really want to go win those games? I mean, I know the players certainly do, but
sure, and the coaches, because you've got an interim coaching staff, but like
the coach does, but like the juice, the you know, I just don't feel that this team is going to come out in Arrowhead at noon on Christmas and give the Chiefs a game. Aren't those people just going to want to get back to their families and fly home as soon as they can? And like, I don't see it. So to me, the fact that if the Raiders had strung together some wins, and instead of 5-8 now, if they were 8-6 and one of these teams that were right here in the hunt, I would think like, man, this is a trap game. Yeah, I know they've got Aiden O'Connell, but like, you know, but like right now, I just feel like the Chiefs need to make sure that they take care of business here, because I don't think the Raiders are going to do much to stop it.
Sure. I mean, it's on Christmas Day. And, you know, when you get to Christmas, the end of the season is tantalizingly close. These guys have probably already made their offseason plans. You know, they're going to Cancun or whatever. And the Chiefs need to be the team that sends them off into the sunset. And hopefully they'll be able to do that. When the Chiefs have the ball here, they are still the fifth ranked offense in DVOA. Again, you know, how, but they are. They're going up against a pretty good Raider defense, 11th in DVOA. But this is a team that, like you said, historically has been a get right game for the Chiefs. Even in a season where the Raiders have like their best defense in, their best defense this millennium, probably.
Yeah, sure.
The Chiefs still move the ball at will against them, really kind of had their way with that defense in the first matchup. And, you know, I'd expect probably the same in this game. You know, as long as the Chiefs can get something going. I mean, really, when they played the Raiders the last time, this was kind of where we started to see them unleash Rashee Rice a little bit.
We talked about the trio of
right.
Rice, Pacheco, and Kelsey.
Right.
Finally got the lion's share of the offense, and it worked.
Right. And Rashee Rice had 8 catches for 107 yards against the Raiders, and obviously popped that touchdown, you know, with the yak on that play against the Raiders. I mean, it felt like this game was sort of the start of what we're seeing with the current Chiefs offense, which has been better. I mean, it's not 2018,
no,
but it's definitely getting better. So it feels like the Chiefs should be able to score. On the other side, the Raiders, you know, have had pretty good offenses over the last 10 years or so. You know, they were very efficient under John Gruden. They had the 2016 year with Jack Del Rio and Derek Carr out there, where they were pretty solid, you know, a top 10 offense, you know, maybe a top 8 offense if you're being generous to the Raiders. But they are 28th this year. And, you know, 28th with I get it. He's a rookie quarterback, a mid-round rookie quarterback. But, you know, Devontae Adams, Jacoby Myers, you know, two pretty good players. Michael Mayer, the tight end, has come on recently. Josh Jacobs obviously won the rushing title last year.
Mm-hmm.
This is a team that should be better on offense, but they're 28th. The Chiefs have the 8th ranked defense in DVOA and just completely dominated another bad offense in the Patriots. Now, the Patriots are a different degree of bad in offense compared to the Raiders. You know, the Raiders are 28th. The Patriots actually, oh my God. Patriots actually 27th. I was like so confident that the Patriots were going to have. I didn't even look it up. I was like, there's absolutely no way that they could possibly be better than the Raiders. But they actually are almost identical in DVOA. The Patriots are negative 13.2%, 13% worse than the league average. And the Raiders are 14.5% worse than the league average. So, you know, the Chiefs defense just had their way with a pretty comparable offense, and I would expect that to be the same on Monday.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that the matchups here are good. Really, it's just about vibes for the Chiefs. It's about taking a big breath before these final three games of the year, realizing who they are as a team, as a franchise, as an offense specifically, because the defense knows who they are. They get after it. They're, you know, they're in good shape. The offense needs to just kind of step up. They need to man up. They need to find some guys that are able to go make some plays. And for the love of God, like, help Patrick Mahomes out. Like, this dude is, he leads the NFL in total yards, passing, post rushing. And he's just, he's trying his damnedest out there. And I know he hasn't had the best year statistically, but certainly it takes more than one guy to have a good statistical year in football. And, you know, I'm looking forward to the Rashee Rice development and maturation there. Obviously, with me having him going against you in our Listener Dynasty League, I would love a little two touchdown, 150 performance by out of Rashee. But really, anything more, like, as long as he's sitting around 7-8 catches, 80 yards, something like that, like wide receiver one typical type of numbers, I'm going to feel great about the Chiefs moving forward using him. And then from there, I'd love to see Travis Kelce get a swagger back. I think he's been struggling. He's so close now to 1,000 yards for the eighth row. Has every division title also been a Travis Kelce 1,000-yard season? I think that's correct.
Yes, it would be. Yep.
I think so. I mean,
that's right.
So just, you know, keep on keeping on with him.
Sure. I mean, that's the formula that works. Travis Kelce gets 1,000 yards. We win the division. And
go at least host the AFC Championship. You know, I know Super Bowls are the big deal, and that's what everyone is in this thing for. But if, and I'm also a little ahead of my skis because they might not even make it this far, but if the Chiefs find themselves hosting the AFC title game for the sixth straight year, like, fucking all bets are off. How can you think anything negative about this franchise or this team or this coaching staff or these players moving forward if they can turn what we've seen so far into that same year that they've had? I would love to see it, obviously. We'll see if they can pull it off starting with this Raiders win on Christmas.
Merry Christmas to all our listeners out there. Happy holidays if you do not celebrate Christmas, but hopefully you will be celebrating it on Monday. After the Chiefs beat the hell out of the Raiders and clinched their eighth consecutive AFC West title. It's always sunny in Chiefs Kingdom. See you guys next week.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.